You can market whatever you want, you can say whatever you want, but there will be a day of reckoning where if you're not really delivering value, if you're not really providing a solution to a problem, then you will cease to exist.
Hey, Guy Powell here, and welcome to another episode of the Backstory on Marketing and AI. Please visit prorelevant.com if you'd like to find out more information about me. And if you'd like to learn more about my upcoming book, we've got some big surprises coming and hopefully some interesting stuff for you. And if you want to find out more about that, go to marketingmachine.prorelevant.com. So today I'm interviewing Joshua Gould, and he is the CEO of The Big Word. And let me tell you a little bit about him. So he is an investor and operator specializing in scaling businesses through private equity value creation, M&A, and modern go-to-market strategies. As CEO of The Big Word, he grew revenue from 6 million to over 100 million, led a $20 million AI investment, and shares candid insights on deals, growth, and execution. Wow, it's so good to have you. Welcome, Joshua. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
Before we go any further, a quick pause. This is important. Your sales force is one of the most expensive investments in your company. The real question isn't who's likely to buy someday, it's who should be called right now to create the most value. Traditional propensity models tell you who might convert. Our prescriptive modeling, called COPA, tells you who will convert because you called them. If you manage a large sales organization and want higher conversion, bigger deals, and better use of every rep hour, let's talk. If you want your sales team focused on the calls that matter most, visit prescriptivemodeling.prorelevant.com and set up a short strategy session.
Yeah, me too, Guy. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, well, tell us your backstory on marketing and AI. How did you get involved in this really cool stuff?
Well, I'll park AI. Let me start with marketing. And I was living in New Jersey and New York City for many years. And this is probably 10, 15, 20 years ago. And everyone who was cool, so all the cool kids had apps. And, if you didn't have an app, it was almost like, who are you? And my wife used to tell me when I got home, Josh, why don't you have an app? And I used to say, well, I do have apps. I've got many apps, but I don't call my business an app. It's an actual business. It serves to do something. And she just saw these people who were raising a lot of money and therefore spending a lot of money and taking home a lot of money. And then she saw me kind of, we had a really nice house, but full of secondhand furniture as we plugged loads of money into the R&D of our business. And The Big Word exists to eradicate the final barrier of communication, which of course is language. We exist to help governments and public sector organizations communicate with the populations. And that's what we were focused on. And we didn't really care whether it was AI or whether it was human. But AI's been huge in our business for a very long time. In 1998, machine learning, hybrid machine learning, as we used to call it, which was very much a rules-based automation system with the ability to start to learn inorganically, came out. And what transpired is you're able to reuse previously translated content. So if you do updates to your book, you're not paying for it all to be translated again. You're just going to pay for the little bits that need to be updated. And I'm not going to get too technical, but ultimately, it created a 70% unit rate reduction, which is absolutely huge, to lose 70% of the units you're selling overnight. And I was selling translation, which is the written word versus interpretation, the spoken word, at the time. Now it's the other way around predominantly. And we panicked and we went out to Honda and we told them there's this new technology and we debated whether we should even tell them. But we figured our competitors would. So we went out and we told them and they said, don't worry, Josh, we're only doing 1% or even less than 1% of all the translation that Honda needs to do. So the fact that you made it cheaper is great. And actually, our business from 1998 would double every 18 months for a long time after that. And the mass of these kind of market accessibility and lower unit rate price is the same in lots and lots of industries. So you make something cheaper, you make it more accessible, and all of a sudden people then will use it at a huge velocity. And that, that I always say the mass of AI in my business makes it grow around 6% a year organically.
Yeah.
And that's the industry. That's not my own business. We grow faster than that. So, cutting to the chase, that happened again in 2013. We had neural AI or neural network AI, and one of the first big case use cases of that commercially was by Google for translation, machine translation, as we call it. And that was huge. I mean, it took this very clunky AI and it made it really like a human, and it's still the gold standard. It's still better than generative and large language model AI, which came in 2021 in a major way. I think OpenAI popularized it. But the only difference actually to what OpenAI did to what Google did with Neural is they made it large language, sorry. And that means that you didn't have to go out and buy and source all this corpora. You could really just train it on the internet. And it made it much more human-like, much more usable. So, we've seen this, and it's had significant effects on our business. It's changed our business, and we've had to learn to build around it and orchestration tools and add a lot of value. But the bottom line is, I never had an app. And even though my entire business is accessible, my clients access it by apps online, my linguists, my workforce of 15,000 people accept and decline jobs through apps. And then internally, we use apps to admin the whole business. But I never looked at myself as an app. And yet, all these companies and all these people, they don't exist today. I was actually thinking, I can't think of one of those apps. And one of them raised a lot of money and went public for $4 billion before it got sold for scraps. And I don't think any of them exist today, but here we are. And, so you can market whatever you want, you can say whatever you want, but there will be a day of reckoning where if you're not really delivering value, if you're not really providing a solution to a problem, then you will cease to exist. So that's where I am today. We stand on the verge of a revolution, an AI revolution. But most of it is marketing without substance. And I think you could have both. That's what I learned is I should have had an app. I could have raised a lot of money. I should have done all the marketing and not sneered at people because I had the substance behind it to back it up. So I'm not missing this revolution, the AI revolution. We are an AI business. We use self-driving workflows. We've done some really cool things.
Absolutely. And it's funny, the you're so right about delivering value, although sometimes the clients that you're selling to, the customers you're selling to, even though they want to buy the value, they also see this emotional value of saying, "Well, I got an app for that, and I just bought an app for that, or I'm subscribing to an app for that." So, packaging things up and promoting them as apps, is definitely maybe in this, at least in this day and age, something that makes more sense. I always got confused early on. I'll tell you jokes. I was with somebody and he was talking about apps and apps and apps, and I'm going, "Appetizers? What's he talking about?" And it's kind of funny to see that. So now you've done a lot in the translation and interpretation space. So how do you see ChatGPT and Claude impacting that? I've been playing with I'm writing another book, and I've been playing with it, using it to translate Latin and Greek, and I've been amazed at how good it appears. I don't know exactly what the original
Oh,
meaning
it
necessarily
didn't.
was, but it certainly appears that it's very well written and that it actually means what I think it's supposed to mean.
I think in the written word, the accuracy is now like 95 to 97% in our testing, as good as a human. And in my opinion, for most content, that is absolutely good enough. And it's not, again, it's not free if you're going to do it at scale, but it's very, very cheap compared to humans. And, but there are many cases, and it's my business where we're in the other 3%. Now, here's an interesting statistic. Every 18 months, the entire content that humanity has created doubles, kind of like my business back in the day. So that 3% or so that needs to be human grade quality, which can still be achieved by AI, but it's just not, you can't just run it for a single AI. You've got to use multiple machines and you've got to use orchestration tools to figure out which AI is good for which language pair. You've got to tune it for say healthcare or healthcare medical versus a different type of healthcare. So these are these tools are available and they're really, really good. But in mission critical, which is what the big word focuses on, they're not good enough. And I'll give you a really good example. We do 50% of all police stations in Amsterdam and roughly the same in the UK have a contract with the big word. And the big word will go there and they will transcribe and they will write down what's being said. Now, imagine you're taking a witness statement and you're 97% accurate. That's going to be thrown out in court in 2 seconds. You can't send someone to jail for the rest of their life, but you're going to be wrong 3% of the time. I mean, if we were right 97% of the time in court, that would mean there are three people for every 100 people in court that are going to be completely innocent and end up in jail. And I'm sure that happens to some extent. I'd hope it isn't 3%, though. I hope it's more like 0.3%. So that's one example. Another example is if you're going to go to, say, a hospital, and I recently had a colonoscopy. So you go to the doctor. Now you will get, by law, you can ask for a human interpreter or translator. And the big word does a lot of these contracts across the US for Medicare and Medicaid. And you can go and ask for it. Now, you will get someone when you're in with the doctor, but you won't get someone, and you're not obliged to get someone when you are filling out all your forms in the sitting room. And they're all in English. So, what do people do then? And, this isn't charity. This is a service that people are paying for. So, that's all in English. And then I saw the doctor and I had my colonoscopy, and you don't see much during that. I don't know if you've ever had one, Guy, but you get put out. And I recommend everyone should have one over the age of 40. And you get put out, and it's very simple, it's very easy. But when you leave, they come to you and they give you an aftercare. And one of the things they say is if you have blood in your stool, you must call 911. Don't even call us. Because internal bleeding happens a few percent of the time, and it can be very serious, obviously. So that is, you've got no interpreter available then. That again is in English. And where AI is great is you can then bring AI, because even if it's 97% accurate, it's 97% better than nothing. So there is a world where you're going to get both. And I think for things like your book, if you are okay with the 3% wrong, and it's not going to be a faux pas 3% of the time, it's going to be 3% inaccurate. But you may have a faux pas in the book. I probably won't say for your podcast, but I went to an OBGYN clinic in China once that were very proud to show me this, and it was called something that you might call a cat clinic. And, so you do get those. And if you are Procter and Gamble and you're spending $100 million a year on advertising, it's nothing to spend $500,000. You know, it's 0.5% on checking that everything localizes correctly. So one thing is translating, but then the meaning can be lost as well. So if you're writing a book where you may make $200,000 in sales from it, you're not going to spend $500,000 on translating it. So everything is an analysis of cost versus reward. But in what I do, which is mission critical military, healthcare, justice, these are governments talking to each other. This is nation rebuilding, war prevention. You know, it's worth getting it right. But we deploy huge amounts of AI to get it right. And, you know, and we've been doing it since 1998.
Quick pause. This is important for any marketing leader. Marketing must continuously prove its value or the budgets dry up. Marketing mix models provide that proof in a way finance and leadership can believe. And we at ProRelevant help teams answer critical questions. Which campaigns actually worked? Which channels really moved the needle? And where should the next dollar go? With over 20 years of experience across complex marketing environments, we know how to deliver clarity, not guesswork. To learn more, go to mmm.prorelevant.com and set up a short strategy session. And now, back to the podcast.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because and I understand exactly where you're going with the 97% and even, you know, I'm sure ChatGPT or, you know, Google or Microsoft, any of these online translators, you know, are going to have errors in them, no question about it. And but, you know, when you're doing something like you're talking about, which is mission critical, it has to be 100%. So I used to be fluent in German. Now I'm kind of half fluent, haven't forgotten a lot of it. But even when I was at my peak of really being very good at German, there are certain areas that you don't even know what the words are. So, for example, I went over to a friend of ours, and they had two kids, and they were talking, you know, the language of not of the kids, but using words that would be used in a family setting with kids. And I'm going, I don't know what they're talking about. And yet I was fluent in everything else, well, in the area that I was working in. And so I could see, though, where if you're going to have a document or something translated, you have to be that expert in that area to on in both languages to be able to really make sure that you're at least 99 point, I don't know, 5% or whatever it is.
Yeah, my wife is fluent in Hebrew and Spanish, which are very important here in Miami where I live. And, you know, could she say Achilles' heel in either language? And Hebrew is her mother tongue. I bet she can't say it. And, you know, or what's a sizer? So, yeah, and that's where you find huge degradation. Now, in the written word, you get about 97% is close. And humans aren't 100% accurate. So it's 97% of human. We typically find humans are around 2% accurate, but again, we have no way of telling that 100% other than getting other humans to check. When it comes to the spoken word, you're using this whole other layer of AI, which is voice recognition. Now, it's generative, so how it works is it actually doesn't understand everything you think you're saying. It basically takes a guess. So let's say it may know 95% of what you're saying, and then it guesses the other 5%. So sometimes it hallucinates, but unobviously, because it kind of fits in fairly well. And then you add in your machine translation equivalent, and now we do voice to voice, so it's not voice to text, which is better. But again, you're now getting like a 93% accuracy for the best of the best. You're getting a 9 second delay as well. Now, I don't think 9 second delay for the best of the best is bad. I think it's great. Again, humans will on simultaneous interpreting, which is what you see at the UN versus, you know, so it's as you're speaking, they're listening and speaking. I don't know how they do it. They're amazing, these people. And they do it for 40 minutes before switching out, and it's like a tag team. It's awesome to watch. And they sit. I'm sitting on one of the booths now that they use because it's soundproof, and it's got good mics. And then, at that point, you're getting like a 90% good output, and that's with perfect mics. Now, we do a lot of prison work. The screaming, the shouting, there's prison jargon. We do wiretaps. We do all sorts of things where they're not clear. And, getting it wrong can be, meaning a terrorist is literally going to be walking around near my kid's school. I mean, I really do feel the threat. So, there is a lot of content out there, though, that 90% is more than good enough, because it's either 90% or nothing.
Yes. Well,
So,
it's interesting. I did once live interpretation, and they'd say a sentence or two, and then I'd be repeating it and whatever, going from English to German, German to English. And a couple of things. I mean, there were a couple of times where in the UN, you don't have the opportunity to ask, well, what did you mean by that? Whereas in when you're kind of sitting with somebody, you go, well, what did you say? How did you say that? And then and then interpret it. I don't know. I don't know how those interpreters do it. After an hour, I was so exhausted, I had to go home and get some sleep. I couldn't think. It was so hard on my brain. I've never done anything that hard at all.
And that's exactly the issue. So interpreters have the same problem. No matter how good they are, their brain is fried after, 8 hours of doing so. They also sometimes go out and drink and come in hungover, and they're not on, or have a bad night's sleep. Our AI never gets drunk. It's completely teetotal. It's had a few viruses in its early days, but it doesn't get sick these days. And that's the great thing about AI. The other thing is it can concurrently have thousands of conversations. And so I am absolutely pro AI. I think it is a revolution. I think the revolution is going to be a 15 to 20 year revolution. I know most people who invest in AI say it's going to be a 2 to 5 year revolution. I don't believe everyone's losing their jobs. I think your jobs will change, or you will lose them. But as long as you change with it, you're going to be absolutely fine. I think what's at risk and is the education system, because the education system exists, and I've got two teenage girls, but the education system exists for them to retain knowledge, and it never teaches really good understanding. And we needed that, because knowledge was actually difficult, and you had to have all these subject matter experts. Well, now you're going to write a book, and whether you like it or not, AI is going to use that. They use it, it's using. I'm sure Gemini's watching this podcast. It's probably a major fan of you. And it's using all of this knowledge, and it's absorbing it all, and it's cross-referencing it, and it's checking it, and it's getting better at being able to regurgitate it. What it can't do is it can't really understand how to apply it. So I think we're going to have a ginormous overhaul of our education system to move away from memorization to actual application. And I've got this week with me, he's outside here right now listening in, a 14-year-old boy from Norway who's come to actually see how the a real business is run and what a CEO does. That's real education. He's seeing it. He's worked in our call center. He's spoken to clients. He's taken live calls, and he's watched AI do it as well. And the AI should, in our call center, deal with about 70% of problems. So when they come through to the human, it's actually really highly skilled work. So yeah, education system is a big one, and I think it's neglected in the conversation because there's too much money to be made in throwing AI at the existing education system. Why recreate it?
Right, exactly. And now you've been in, investing in AI, so and you mentioned a little bit about value creation early on, and so tell me, tell us what your kind of investments that you're, well, if you were going to judge a specific investment, what kind of things would you really be looking for?
Well, I'll tell you a little joke. My grandfather used to love this joke. In the war in the UK, I don't know how it was here. I'm originally from the UK. We had rations in World War II, And so you couldn't use money really. There was a black market for money that uses ration tickets to go out and buy your groceries. And you really couldn't buy that much because England's an island. And I don't know if you know this guy, but the weather's pretty miserable. So we're really good at growing certain fruits, certain vegetables, but we're not good at, say, growing tomatoes. So you go in, and then what we weren't good at would often be tinned and sold for huge amounts of money. So if you wanted like a tinned fish that you couldn't easily get, or tinned tomatoes, they'd be worth a lot of money. So back in the day, people would sell them in the pubs. And so you'd sell your tin of tomatoes, as your audience would say, for a penny. In those days, that was a lot of money for a tin of tomatoes. And maybe you get be able to get that tin and sell it on for 2 pennies, and someone else would sell it on for 4 pennies, and then someone would sell it on for 8 pennies. But at some point, someone would open up the tin and eat the food. And one day, this guy who's just bought for 30 pence a tin of tomatoes comes into the pub, and he's absolutely horrified. And everyone says, "Well, what's wrong?" He says, "I ate the tomatoes and they were all off." And they look at him and they say, "You idiot, they're not for eating, they're for trading." And I think right now we're seeing that as a very good analogy for AI. AI is primarily used as a sales and marketing tool, as a gimmick. It's not really hugely accretive to value outside of the chatbots that we're all using to do research and, the translation, as you said. I think certain companies can prove me wrong there. And those are the ones that are doing exceptionally well. So my own company can prove me wrong there. We use AI to take calls in our call center so that people don't have to sit on the phone finding out why they got paid $20 instead of $21 that they were expecting. And AI will then look it up in our databases. It's highly integrated, and it'll say, "Well, you did that job on that date, and that's how long it lasted, and that's why we calculated it that way." If they want to call up to cancel a job, because our business works a bit like Uber with the taxi drivers. So they, and 70 plus percent of the calls coming into our call centers, and we've got hundreds of people in our call centers, are very simple, easy to deal with, but often take 40 minutes to deal with when it goes through to human, and it can be dealt with in under 90 seconds when it comes through to AI. So it's a better experience for our linguists. People are more happy to work for us. Our margins then go up. But actually, our operation costs are down about 75%. And over three quarters of our business is end-to-end automated using AI with these self-driving workflows. So I pass that cost saving on to my customer, which is the US government and UK government and some of the European governments. And it's beneficial for the taxpayers. So we're using it well, but there's a lot of companies out there that have got a ChatGPT integration, and they're selling these AI services like content writing. Well, I can just go to ChatGPT and do that. I don't know why I'm using you. Another more famous example is I don't know if you use WhatsApp, but that's probably my main communication channel these days. I always, much to the dismay of my IT, ask people to WhatsApp me instead of email me, because I'm only going to get to your email first thing in the morning or last thing in the night. All of a sudden, I see this little bar and it's AI. And I'm just trying to search my messages, and it's telling me about, some of the science behind this. And he's giving me all sorts of answers. I just want to search my message. I don't want AI in my WhatsApp. If I really want to find something out, I'll go to Gemini, or, I'll ask my car. I drive a Tesla and have Grok in it. I don't need another chatbot in WhatsApp. But yet they put it in, and it just frustrated the hell out of people. I don't know if I found a way to turn it off, or they finally turned it off for everyone. But it's the same in Instagram. I mean, we're inserting it into places it has no business being, and it's not really solving a problem. And I think that that's the big issue. So it comes back, Guy, to now marketing. And I think marketeers are brilliant at selling aspirations in the future as if it's already happened today. I think the responsible marketers, though, have an obligation to go and really find out what they're selling and does it really do what they say they're going to do? And then double and triple down. And I think as an investor, that's what I'm looking for is I'm looking for businesses, like I'm looking at business right now, which is using AI to read the scans of potential cancer much quicker and more accurately. Now, it still goes through human, but you will get an AI answer quickly. So instead of waiting, usually 1 to 2 days, you can actually have an answer before you even leave the hospital. And what it'll say is, this is AI, it's going to be reread. Now, it's not 100% accurate, neither is a human. And it comes back to that question of, I have a Tesla, I can press a button and it can drive me. It will crash eventually, but so will I. And in fact, statistically, I'm going to crash more than my car. So why do I even need to keep my eyes on the road? I mean, there isn't actually a good reason. So, not mathematically speaking, there's a good reason. So I'm looking for businesses like that where, this and the cool thing about this is it can actually detect precancerous cells where humans really can't do that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, although I would push back a little bit, and that is if you invent something and you're the engineer or the scientist and you come up with this really cool idea and you don't necessarily know how to package it, or you don't necessarily know how the customers are going to respond, or so quite often you're kind of like, just like a venture capitalist, you're betting on 10 or 20 different companies and
Yes.
expecting one or two to take off, and the other ones, they're going to fail, or they're going to do medium and not go anywhere. But so there is that getting that product out there, being able to show that at least from a maybe it's from a marketing messaging perspective, I'm able to make money. And then using those early customers to find out what they really want. And just like with, WhatsApp and with Instagram, where they're actually providing some, interesting kinds of results or solutions, I guess. And for somebody it might have been interesting, but because they turned it off, it doesn't mean that they didn't learn from it. And it doesn't also mean that, in 5 years, or maybe it's 2 years or 5 months, that somebody or a lot of people will actually want it once it gets, packaged right and what have you. So,
Yeah.
I kind of see it as quite often it's kind of a, especially on new technology, it's also a research tool to get you information so that you can learn from that to then come out with a significantly better or different kind of product based on what you learned.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I'm looking at this from my own perspective as an investor. I don't have billions to throw at something to kind of figure out what's working in research and anything. That's why we need the Facebooks and the Alphabets and the Anthropics of the world to do that. They're driving humanity forward. Either that or they're going to kill us all. We don't know yet, but my money's on humanity. And, so I don't disagree with you, but from my own perspective, I'm looking at that. Now, in your sense of what you're just saying, I do invest in people more than product. Because, first of all, I am lousy at picking products. I don't think I have the creativity and the imagination to really know if a business is great or not. And I actually fall in love with nearly every business I look at. It's one of those things I get excited, I can imagine it working, and I sell it to myself. I'm my worst own enemy as an investor. So I originally started investing in all these companies and I never made any money. It would be basically like buying a lottery ticket. Now what I do is I do invest in the people because I know that a lot of the stuff they try won't work, but they'll learn from it and they'll pivot. So if you find the right person, it's a safer bet than the right product. So I think that lines up with what you're saying. So I'm looking at A, does it really solve a problem? Or are we just kind of building something because it's a good way to raise a lot of money? And B, is the person behind it able to pivot? Because there will be a bad day in the office. There will be a storm. There will be some government changes. Is that person smart enough and streetwise enough to pivot and to react to that?
Yeah, absolutely. And that makes a lot of sense. I mean, you do have that, and that's for like even, early companies or even, mid phase companies where they're going. I'm gonna have to though cut a little bit short. We're running out of time. I do have one last question for you though, and that is, what advice would you give an up and coming new marketer in this era of AI and marketing?
Okay, this is a great question, by the way. And my advice, and I give this advice actually to a lot of people in my own company, is have human connection. I do a lot of these podcasts. I have my own podcast called ExecCraft, which is like a talking head. I do videos all day with people and my management teams. But what's really missing, I think, just from society as a whole, it's not marketers' faults, it's probably people like my fault, is this real human connection where you actually meet people and you have a conversation and it's not an hour on a video, it's sometimes 2 or 3 hours over meals. So I think marketers have this real opportunity to start creating more human events, even if you're selling artificial intelligence events, but you need the human intelligence to agree to it. So I think it's a huge opportunity. I don't think people want to go to those big conferences. I think people also, the networking got a bit old and stale because everyone's there just to sell something rather than to buy something. I don't have the answer, guy, but I know the problem. And the problem is we're trying to run these businesses behind screens. And I see when I'm in the office with my team, just information flows quicker. People say what they're really thinking rather than talking around things. So I think, like I said, if marketers can overcome that problem, and that's where I'd be very focused. How can I overcome that? How can I gain people's genuine trust? Because it's deep. It goes beyond the surface. People don't really fall in love with AI. They fall in love with the fact they don't have to speak to humans and they can get some human-like touch. But in reality, it's not a real relationship. It doesn't get better after day one. I mean, what great relationship can't get better from day one? It just stays the same. And maybe you can tune it a little bit and get it to tell you what you want to hear. But we're craving human touch. We're craving human bonds. And society is getting more and more lonely. So I think any marketeer that can figure out how to crack that code is going to do exceptionally well.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. It's trust and relationship, are a big piece of that, and human relationship, not human to AI, but human to human, and building that into your marketing in some fashion. Well, Joshua, really, thank you so much. Really fantastic, and appreciate your insights and participation today. And for the audience, definitely stay tuned for many other videos in this series of the backstory on marketing and AI. And by the way, Joshua, where can folks learn more about you and your company, The Big Word?
Yeah, so you can find me on LinkedIn. You know what to do, Josh Gould and the big word in the search bar, or head over to ExecCraft and check out. I have a short, not as sophisticated as yours, guy, but a short podcast and make my day and subscribe. And please do the same for Guy, wherever you're listening. Make sure you do the same.
Thank you. Thanks for the plug. Now I don't have to say that myself. But definitely subscribe to mine and to yours. What was it called again? ExecCraft?
Yes, ExecCraft. And we do like strategies, kind of no nonsense. They're 7-minute videos, they drop once a week.
Fantastic. Well, I'm going to subscribe right now. But so anyway, thank you, Joshua, and to the audience. Definitely stay tuned for many other videos. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Guy.